It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
The Virginia foreclosure process, it's all non-judicial, which means that your client, as a tenant, has more rights than they do as a homeowner. So all that's required to have a foreclosure sale is they have to accelerate your loan, usually pursuant to paragraph 22 of the deed of trust. It's usually called the pre-acceleration notice or notice of default. And they'll tell you you're past due this amount. You have 30 days to pay it. Otherwise, we're going to accelerate your loan, and then they can foreclose on your house.
Private attorney Christy Kelly explains how an attorney can help rescind a foreclosure sale if a mortgage company improperly applies payments or falsely promises that a sale date has been canceled. And during this week's News You Can Use, we'll tell you about Housing Not Handcuffs, a new campaign initiative to end the criminalization of homelessness. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 298, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Homelessness remains a national crisis, with millions of people homeless or at risk, including at least 1.36 million homeless children enrolled in U.S. public schools. Although many people experiencing homelessness have literally no choice but to live outside and in public places, laws and enforcement practices punishing the presence of visibly homeless people in public space continue to grow. To combat this trend, this month, the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty launched the Housing Not Handcuffs campaign, together with over 100 allied organizations, to move communities away from ineffective, expensive, and often unconstitutional criminalization strategies and toward housing solutions that work. A key feature of the campaign launch is the Law Center's latest national report on the criminalization of homelessness entitled Housing Not Handcuffs, Ending the Criminalization of Homelessness. The report draws upon research that the Law Center has conducted since 2006 to the present of laws criminalizing homelessness in 187 cities across the country. This is the only national report of its kind, and this data represents the most comprehensive analysis yet conducted by the Law Center of criminalization laws and local trends of enforcement. The data reveal that local governments continue to pursue criminalization strategies and that such policies have dramatically increased over the past 10 years. Laws prohibiting sleeping in public throughout an entire city have increased by 31% since 2006, and broadly written camping bans that prohibit sleeping, or even merely preparing to sleep, have risen by 69% since that time. Most strikingly, laws prohibiting living in vehicles, which may be an impoverished person's last option for some shelter from the elements, have increased by a whopping 143% since 2006. At the same time that local governments trend toward criminalization strategies, the federal government has mounted increased pressure to discourage local criminalization policies in favor of data-informed, constructive alternatives. The U.S. Department of Justice, for example, condemned the criminalization of sleeping when there are no places where that unavoidable activity may lawfully occur, as unconstitutional, cruel, and unusual punishment prohibited by the Eighth Amendment. This was in a brief filed in the Law Center's challenge to a camping ban in Boise, Idaho. Criminalization policies simply do not address the underlying causes of homelessness and waste precious tax dollars on policies that do not work. For more, go to www.nlchp.org. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wakebright. Often, foreclosures occur because mortgage companies improperly apply payments or promise that a sale date has been canceled. At this year's annual statewide legal aid conference, private attorney Christy Cully explained how an attorney can help rescind a foreclosure sale if one of these things happen. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there, and here is the first part of her remarks.
So the basics for litigating or intaking mortgage cases is you have to, start with your client. You do your client intake. During the course of the intake, you will find that your clients just want to go over the 8-year history of their mortgage servicing and just kind of let out the frustration that they have with their mortgage servicers. And so it's very common that they will just go on for a while, but it's important that you try to identify issues that they may have that you could use to leverage legal claims. And then you need to evaluate the claims. You need to collect whatever documents that they may have. It's really important to get their original mortgage documents, any communications or correspondences that they've had with their servicer, and any foreclosure notices. It's very important to ask them if they have received mail that they have not picked up, because oftentimes a lot of important mail is mailed certified, and by not picking it up does not mean it was not delivered. And so it's really important to do that. I'm going to go over the basics of loss mitigation, how to set up a case, the law, litigation, and remedies. So this is the basics of a client intake. The first thing you want to know is where they are in the process. Do they have a foreclosure sale date? Are they behind? Are they current? Has their home already been foreclosed? Because a lot of where they are in the process is going to affect your analysis of what you can and cannot do to help them. A lot of times, there may be things that you can do to help a client, but because you're a legal aid lawyer, you have limited resources and time. And so if you could spend a week litigating a case, filing injunction to get your client an extra week in the house, that may or may not be the best use of your time and resources. So you just have to really think about where they are in the process and understand what has gone on to date. So you want to know, why are they behind? Are they behind simply because they don't think their mortgage servicer can show them the note, and so they think they should get a free house and they're not going to pay? That's a lot different of a case than someone who has a loan modification, has been paying, and then their servicer all of a sudden says, you don't have a mod, we're not accepting it, and now you're 2 years behind. So you need to figure out why they're behind. Was there a hardship, an employment hardship, and that's since been rectified, and they now have income, they now could pay their mortgage if they could just get loss mitigation? Is there some sort of payment dispute? There's a lot of different issues that you need to think about to understand the type of claims and your client's specific situation and how to resolve their problem. You also will have to look at the value of the property versus the amount of the mortgage, what their income is. Those two things are important, because a lot of times people want to keep their house just because they think that's what they're supposed to say. They think that it's my house, I need to keep it. But if they have a house that's now worth $100,000 and they owe $400,000 on it, and they only have a limited amount of income, and they may not be able to afford to have the lifestyle that they want if they were to stay in the house, it may be in their best interest to try to do a short sale or pursue some other sort of loss mitigation that would dispose of the collateral, rather than try to stay in the home and just prolong the process. So a lot of what you do is try to figure out with your client what the best thing for them is and what you can do to help them meet their objectives. You also want to ask if it's a refinance versus a purchase money transaction, because if it's a refinance, you might have some protections under the Truth in Lending Act, but it has to be within 3 years. Those claims are a lot less common today. There have been a lot of regulations since then that pretty much has stopped any rescission claims from happening, and that case law in Virginia is not really that great on that, but you still should find out. You also want to know who the owner or investor of the loan is. If it's a FHA loan or if it's a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan, there may be certain different requirements that they need to do in order to, prior to proceeding to foreclosure, and your client may have certain benefits in the loss mitigation process. You want to know if they're coming you to help to get a loan mod, have they already tried? And maybe they're denied because they don't have sufficient income, or maybe they've already been offered mods multiple times and they just don't like what they're being offered because they want a principal write down of like $800,000. You know, you need to know what's gone on in the past so that you can decide what an effective use of your time is with your resources and who you can help. Because the reality is that you're not going to be able to help everybody in these cases because they can be kind of burdensome and lengthy. And so you need to decide who you can help and who has the realistic objectives that you can meet. You'll need to know where they are in the process, if they're pre or post foreclosure. If they're post foreclosure, all is not lost. There still are things that you can potentially do. It's a lot more difficult if it's a third party purchaser, for instance, some private investor or a family who's intending to use the home for their own. And you need to know ultimately what your client wants. Do they want to stay in the home? Do they want to litigate? Do they want to just not own the home anymore and get out of this mess? What are their objectives? Because at the end of the day, your job is to do what's best for your client and what your client wants. And so if you can't meet their objectives, from day one you know their objectives are something that you cannot attain, then it may not be best to engage with that client. I've had a client who I thought had an awesome case. I would have loved to litigate it. And they were just like, no, I don't want to litigate it. I just want this problem fixed. So I just wrote a letter. We fixed the problem. I was really sad because it would have been so fun. But that's what my client wanted. She would not have wanted to sit for a deposition. She would not have wanted to go to court. I did what she wanted, and she was really happy. I have clients that come in and say that they want $1 million. They want, you know, Bank of America to issue a public apology. You know, all these things that I just know are not going to happen. And so from day one, I know I will not be able to make that client happy. And so you just have to think about who your clients are and what their objectives are so you can best determine if it's a case that you should take on. So these are generally what the objectives are. Some clients just want to know, okay, my home was foreclosed on, like how much time do I have? Or I think my home's going to go to foreclosure sale, like what are my rights? Do I have to leave the next day? Like can I stay? You know, what do I do? Do I need to pay the new owner rent? Do I have time to move my stuff out? Stuff like that. And so sometimes just having the knowledge of their rights under Virginia law is all that someone would need. So one of the things I said that is really important to find out is who owns the loan. So there's different websites. If you can look up if it's Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan. You can also look up on the MERS website. It's the Mortgage Electronic Registration System. And you can look up on there and see who their servicer is. And if you go like click a link further, you can enter their social with their consent and find out who the investor is as well. That's usually the most reliable way to do it. Sometimes if you enter a property name wrong or there's a unit number, sometimes the Fannie and Freddie websites are a little bit harder to figure out. You can also look at like the pooling and servicing agreements if there are securities and investments, usually on like the SEC's website if there's a trust involved. So these are the documents that I generally want to have if I am thinking about taking on someone's case. You obviously want your note, your deed of trust. In Virginia, when you buy a house and you take out a mortgage, you sign a note, which is you saying, like, I, Christy Kelly, owe Bank of America $100,000. And then you also sign a deed of trust, which says, you know, I, Christy Kelly, understand that I sign a note saying I owe Bank of America $100,000. And I'm signing this deed of trust saying that if I don't pay it, you can send me certain notices, and then you could foreclose on my house. And so there's two documents in play. The deed of trust is the lien on the property that secures the note. The note is the obligation to repay. And so you'll want both of those documents. The mortgage servicer can be someone that you took out the loan with. It commonly is transferred But you'll want any notices that they've received from their servicer, just so you can see the history and the types of correspondences that have been received. You'll want monthly statements, including the back page. Under the newer regulations, in order to trigger certain liability under RESPA, you need to send notices to the particular address that they instruct you to. And so that's usually on the back page of the mortgage statement. So I always have my clients provide me the full mortgage statement. You'll also want any loan modification agreements that they may have signed or been offered, any denial notices for loss mitigation. If there's a payment dispute, you want proof of payments, canceled checks, any bank statements. You know, you want to be really thorough in getting the documentation in advance. You know, a couple hours done in advance will really save you, 100 hours into litigation, realizing if I would have gotten the whole bank statement, I would have saw the funds were returned or, something like that. So it's really important to be diligent on the front end. You want to see any foreclosure notices, have them get all certified mail. And then I also like to have my client get credit reports if there is some sort of payment dispute or a modification issue. You could set up a credit case under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. It's my favorite statute because the remedies are so powerful for your clients. And you can get the credit reports from free from annualcreditreport.com. If there was a bankruptcy or something like that and they reaffirmed, there can also be issues sometimes with how the payments are calculated. I have cases where they enter a modification in Chapter 13. It's approved by the court. The arrearages are disallowed. But once the bankruptcy is completed, they still want the arrearages. And so they'll report it on the credit report. And so there's a lot of different issues that you can look for to build a credit claim as well.
You've been listening to private attorney Christy Kelly explaining how an attorney can help rescind a foreclosure sale if a mortgage company improperly applies payments or falsely promises that a sale date has been canceled. We'll be back in a moment. We continue now with the remarks of private attorney Christy Kelly, explaining how an attorney can help rescind a foreclosure sale if a mortgage company improperly applies payments or falsely promises that a sale date has been canceled.
The Virginia foreclosure process, it's all non-judicial, which means that your client, as a tenant, has more rights than they do as a homeowner. So all that's required to have a foreclosure sale is they have to accelerate your loan, usually pursuant to Paragraph 22 of the Deed of Trust. It's usually called the pre-acceleration notice or notice of default. And they'll tell you you're past due this amount. You have 30 days to pay it. Otherwise, we're going to accelerate your loan, and then they can foreclose on your house. At that point, they will retain foreclosure lawyer. There's probably a handful of them in Virginia. They call foreclosure trustees who are appointed to conduct the sale on the steps of the courthouse. Usually your client will have about 30 to 45 days notice. If your client does not contact the servicer or the trustee during this time, the foreclosure sale will almost certainly be completed within that time frame. If they reach out, if they retain a lawyer, if they dispute, or if they're trying to do loss mitigation, oftentimes you can delay the sale and get back on like a mitigation track. But doing nothing is the worst thing you can do in Virginia. There's no redemption period. Once a foreclosure sale occurs, it's final. The one exception is that sometimes you can undo a sale if it's less than like 2 or 3 weeks because the deed has not yet been filed. So there'll be a sale and there's an agreement in principle, but the title actually hasn't transferred. And the foreclosure trustee, if you can act quickly, has the right to undo it. But once that deed is filed and it's a third party, it's really, really difficult to undo. If it's bought back by the bank or the investor, there's still something you can do as long as there's a good legal claim there. And then their rights post-foreclosure are similar to that of a tenant, where they have the right to possess the property because they came to possess it lawfully. They would need notice, and then they need to be taken to court for the lender to gain possession. So loss mitigation, I'm just going to briefly go over this. Generally, what I don't do loss mitigation as a private lawyer. I know a lot of legal aid organizations have certified housing counselors at their offices, but I generally don't do it because there are a lot of organizations that do it for free that are funded by HUD, and they provide free services. They're HUD-approved housing counseling agencies. You can go into HUD.gov, click your zip code, and I usually refer people to housing counseling agencies in their area so that they can get in touch with the right people. They should never pay upfront fees for any of these services. These are free services. A lot of the housing counseling agencies, too, have direct access to the servicer's website, so they can upload documents directly to the bank's system for loss mitigation. So it's really effective. And if you're at a legal services organization and you have limited resources, you know, you have someone that you can refer loss mitigation issues to. The most common ones are forbearance, essentially. That would be applicable if someone lost their job or was ill and had a lot of medical debt, and they told their servicer that we're having this hardship, it's hopefully temporary, can you give us like a 6-month window to not make payments or to make a $50 payment or something like that? And so you would essentially not be in default even though you're not making your payments for 6 months because you and your servicer have agreed to allow you to forbear payments till later in the life of the loan. There's repayment plans. For a lot of our clients, these are not really that helpful. It's just you repay everything that you owe. Usually it's over a 6 to 18 month period. And they'll set up a payment schedule where in addition to your normal monthly payment, you just pay extra. And then the loan modification is generally what people want. It is a modifying terms of your note. So it can change your interest rate. So if you have a high client with a high rate loan, they're paying 7%, it could lower it to like 2%. So it would significantly reduce their monthly payments. It could extend the life of the loan from 30 years to 40 years. It could forbear a large chunk of the principal balance due to essentially like a second lien that's interest-free. And so your client's monthly payments would then go down because they're paying on a smaller mortgage balance. So there are a lot of options that the servicers use when they modify loans. And generally that's when a client comes for loss mitigation, that's generally what they're looking for. There's also loss mitigation available if someone does not want to keep their home. A short sale is when if I owe $200,000 on my home and it's now only worth $100,000, I would sell my house for $100,000. The bank would approve to forgive the difference. And then, so they would accept $100,000 and it would satisfy my full obligation to them. And so there could be tax consequences on the amount of debt that the bank does forgive. So it's important that your client understand that. A deed in lieu is very similar, except instead of selling it to a third party, you simply say, I owe you $200,000. I'm just going to give you back title to the house, and I don't owe you anything anymore. And then the foreclosure sale is when your house is sold. Sometimes, depending on who the lender is, they'll buy it back for the full amount that's owed. Sometimes they don't, and so your client could be liable for a deficiency. If it's an FHA loan, those loans are insured, and so your client won't be liable for a deficiency in an FHA loan. Post-foreclosure, when they're trying to gain possession, your clients could also get cash for keys, and that is essentially when they pay your client to vacate voluntarily so they don't have to hire a lawyer and evict them through the court process. The general rule of thumb is what they first offer you is not their best offer. And the longer your client stays, the less money they will get. If your client were to vacate sooner, usually they can get a larger payment. Inevitable if you do mortgage cases that you're going to see a lot of issues with loss mitigation. And it's probably the easiest area to exploit from the mortgage servicer because that is not what they initially intended to do when they came into business. And they're still trying to figure out how to deal with all the new guidelines, like everything's always changing, what the regulations are. And so it's an easy way for you to build a claim for your client. There's often inaccurate and conflicting information. So you will be getting monthly statements. Your client will get monthly statements saying they owe, you know, they're 18 months behind, but they've been paying on a modification for the past 12 months and it's fully executed and, you know, they don't know what's going on. And so those could be potentially really good and valuable cases. And it's something that you could really benefit your client with. sometimes it's difficult to contact the mortgage servicer. That's why if they're trying to do loss mitigation, I always recommend that they work with the housing counseling agency. I recommend that you always write letters because you trigger the protection of the statute, RESPA. If you do a request for information or notice of error, you are creating legal claim and leverages for your client if they don't properly respond. They often don't have policies or procedures to prevent dual tracking. Delays in responding to consumers, inadequate and untrained personnel, and sometimes this can lead to wrongful foreclosures, and so that's why it's important.
You've been listening to private attorney Christy Kelly explaining how an attorney can help rescind a foreclosure sale if a mortgage company improperly applies payments or falsely promises that a sale date has been canceled. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. And that's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The ACLU Center for Justice is focused on the problems in the U.S. criminal justice system. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when Jeffrey Robinson, ACLU Deputy Director, speaks about the work of his center in reforming the policies of over-incarceration that have led the U.S. to imprison more people than any other country in the world. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbrink.